the cost, the total cost, so direct and indirect cost, usually comes in around $200,000 a year.
Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
This is Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human. Thanks for joining me today. I've been finishing up some travel recently, and I'm ready to have some enjoyment of the summer months here in North Alabama with the kids. I actually have a ton of exciting things coming up. I want to share a few quick announcements before we get into the show today. The book is now in the editor's hands. Thank goodness. If you heard that giant sigh of relief from wherever you're listening, that was me. I'm actually actively scheduling keynotes and other virtual sessions in the next 12 to 18 months, so there's a good chance you'll be able to hear the story from me live, hopefully, in some form or fashion. Hopefully it's coming to a conference near you. For example, next month I'm talking with Ultimate Software's head AI scientist about how to make work more human. I'm doing a webinar with Next Concept HR Association, NCHRA, on AI trends in HR tech. I'll be at the HR Tech Conference this fall. I'm going to be at the SHRM Diversity Conference talking about bias and algorithms and how those things, the technology we're using, can increase our bias if we're not careful. So it'll be a really fun thing. I work with the Human Capital Institute on a session to discuss the skills we need to future-proof ourselves in the age of AI. Lots and lots of good, fun stuff there. So again, lots of opportunities to hear me. And that's just this fall in the next few months. There'll be other things coming as well. Stay tuned. One of the other sides of the business that I don't talk about much here is training. Since 2009, we've been doing training for HR professionals that want to get their certifications, PHR, SPHR, SHRM. HRCI, the certifying body for HR leaders, is actually changing their test this year. So our team's coming out with an all-new version of our testing tools to help people out. And because our team's working on the research and development process for that, we're also creating some mini courses around key things like strategic talent acquisition, learning measurement, and so on. Last week, we actually released our very first one-hour course for free, HR certification credit, and the content's based on the interviews that I do here on the podcast. All you have to do, listen to the audio, take the little quiz, and you get your free HRCI or SHRM credit hour. Easy peasy. More info is going to be available at upstarthr.com. That's upstarthr.com in the coming weeks. So be sure you're subscribed there if you want to check that out. Take advantage of those things. If you're like me and you're also certified, I've got my SPHR and my SHRM SCP. I'm always looking for some good credit hour opportunities for free, and you'll find some good ones there. Speaking of learning, learning is a fundamental component of how we live and work. But all too often in the work context, it's a check-the-box activity, and there's not really a strategic approach to it. We actually found last year in some of our research that high-performing companies are much more likely than low-performing companies to have things like a learning strategy in place and to have a strategic approach to creating and deploying their learning content. People that are doing good things on the business side are more likely to do that. People that are struggling on the business side are more likely to just do this kind of ad hoc, no strategy behind it, or just do it because they're doing it, not because they're hoping to impact the business. One of the most common types of training we do in virtually every business is around safety. How do we prepare people to make wise decisions around safety at work? As I point out during the show today, the thing that I always come back to is that we cannot approach safety from the perspective of, okay, well, if I don't do it right, it only affects me. Because in reality, a lot of us have things that we do that affect other people. If that person that's driving the forklift doesn't pay attention to safety training, they could end up hurting someone else. And so it's really not about safety of yourself, but safety of the people around you and taking care of them. Today's discussion is with Rick Tobin. He's the CEO of Safety Now. We talk about things like retention of learning, the critical role of safety training, and more. Really, really great discussion, and one that I really enjoyed. I hope you will as well. Thank you to the instructor team for setting me up with Rick, connecting with him. He was a sharp guy, fun. We had twice the conversation. I had to trim it down pretty good to get the podcast for you guys. Now, on with the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of We're Only Human. I'm Ben Eubanks, your host, and today I'm talking about learning and why it matters to the business. I recently actually had a great discussion with the team at Florida Blue about this. When I guest hosted with Steve Bowes on the HR Happy Hour podcast. I'll make sure and get a link to that in the show notes so you can check it out if you're interested. But today I'm actually joined by Rick Tobin. He's the president of Safety Now. We're going to talk about learning, content, training, all that good stuff. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So to get us started off, tell us a little about who you are, what you do, and then a little more about what Safety Now does so we can understand that.
Sure. Absolutely. So, I'm president CEO of Bondguard Media, Safety Now. I've been in place for, it seems like forever, but I've been in this role for 2 years with the company in various positions for 10 plus years. Most of my background is in marketing research. I in a previous life did a whole bunch of research on search engines and user engagement and foveal engagement and all kinds of interesting things where we set up devices onto people's heads and saw what they looked at and how they looked at and emotional responses. And that was fun.
Oh.
Back when the technology wasn't quite as advanced as it is now, so you try and get as good at user engagement as somebody wearing a 50-pound device on their head. So, you know, it was a real natural kind of environment.
Yes, absolutely. That was totally.
Yeah. It didn't sway the research whatsoever, but do the best with the tools that you have. So a little bit about Safety Now. Safety Now has been in operation since 1929. Now, we originally started out as a company named Safety Foreman. And it's kind of fun for me is that we have this basement in our building here that's got all of our old indexes of publications since 1929. And one time I went down there into the basement to wander around and I started reading one of the old newsletters that we had produced back in the 30s. And it talked about this great innovation called the hard hat. So I don't know if you're aware, but the hard hat didn't actually come into place until they started construction on the Hoover Dam. We've been around for a long time. And at the time, you know, back in 1929, it was really about just having information and getting information out. And obviously things have changed now and the company has evolved and moved and been bought, sold a few times over and changed the names a couple times over. But we're still very much a safety training and safety compliance company.
Mm, exciting. And maybe the hard hat eventually caught on, right?
I hear it's going to be big.
It's going to be big at some point in the future. Interesting.
That's right.
Oh, I've got to be careful not to go too far down that rabbit hole because I love history and I love like understanding those kinds of things and innovations and everything else. That's really – anyway, to keep us from going too far that way, I love that stuff though. That'd be fun to chat about. Talk about – I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, but you guys do safety training. That's the core of your business. That's what you focus on. So learning is a key component of that. I've always been careful to say that training doesn't equal learning, right? Just because I throw some training at you – or here, how about this? Safety training is all about – let's pop in the video cassette. Dating myself a little bit. Pop in the video cassette. Let them watch that, you know, passive learning, and then they're all good to go, right? That's completely proven to eradicate safety issues.
Right? Yeah. So I think, you know, and that's kind of where I guess one of the foundations or the drivers into some of the innovations that we've been doing over the last couple of years is you're exactly right. Safety training is not kind of ubiquitous with safety learning. I mean, for 90% of companies out there, safety training is still actually, and not as antiquated or you're trying to sound as old as you feel, safety training is still popping in the VHS tape. You know, wheeling around for those that are listening, the television on the cart, with the AV working down the hallway and popping in the videotape. And it's not that much different. It's more of like a push the information out. And I've said it, so obviously because I've said it, you were paying attention, and obviously because I said it, you were engaging, and obviously because I said it, you'll remember it, and you'll be safe. Mm-hmm. And really, it comes down to and I'm not saying that companies are not don't find safety important. I'm not saying that managers don't understand the value of it. I'm not saying that they don't appreciate their employees, and all of them understand that their employees are their number one asset. Safety is very important to companies in the United States and Canada, all around the world. I mean, there are always a couple of outliers out there that make you kind of question, but in general, safety is important and accidents and incidents are going down. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that for the vast majority of companies, it's a checkbox, right? It's, I have to do it. I've hired somebody. I am being told either by a union or some regulatory body or government that they need to know how to do X, and so I'm going to tell them how to do X. By the way, did you hear how to do X? And it's done. I mean, if you'll allow me to rant for a little bit, you can edit it out if I rant too much. I grew up in Vancouver, BC. I don't know how many people you have or if you yourself have ever been out there, but my grandfather played for the Vancouver Canucks. It was a hockey team, still a hockey team, but back in the day it was in the WHL. So I kind of grew up like a lot of Canadian kids, 10 feet under snow, living in my igloo and playing hockey. The first two are jokes, but the last one is pretty much what Canadian does. So we have a client, and the client is the Vancouver Canucks now, for safety now. And so they invited me down to the rink to do a little walkthrough. And of course, me being a kid whose grandfather played for the team, and I could pretend that I was 8 years old and back on the rink, I said, yeah, absolutely. I can write this off as a business expense. I'll be there tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so I went down and the gentleman there, the safety director, walked me around the rink. And this was right after Vancouver had done the Winter Olympics. So when the Olympics were going on, there was a mad rush to finish off all this infrastructure, right? So they brought in electricians, carpenters, every tradesperson known to man from everywhere in the world to try and get all these rinks or facilities built as quickly as they could, because the television cameras were going to start rolling tomorrow and the buildings had to be done. So part of this was... the rink was there, and the safety director had to deliver what is the conventional safety talk every single day. And so one day he's delivering his safety talk inside a meeting room, just probably like everybody that's listening here has a meeting room that people go into, and he delivered this talk on ladder safety. It's not a new talk. I mean, it's not new information. Ladders have not really evolved or innovated in the last few years, contrary to what the late night television tells you about this ladder that moves. They're still pretty much the same, and the safety procedures haven't really changed that much. So he delivered this ladder safety talk that most of these guys have heard 20 times already in their life. Now, thinking about the audience was made up of people whose first language probably wasn't English for a lot of them. For the vast majority of them, their number one priority was getting to the work site and getting that job done, because that was the pressure, right? They didn't want to be there. And no matter how many donuts he bought and how much coffee he bought, all of them were checking out their telephones and wanted to get out of the room as fast as possible. And that's not an uncommon experience for a lot of companies in safety training. So he delivers this ladder safety talk, and once it's all done, everybody quickly rushes out as fast as they can to the job sites. And he cleans up the donuts that are half eaten and the coffee cups that nobody took out and the little paper handouts that he gave that told people how to use the ladders the right way and throws them all in the garbage. And that takes him about 5-10 minutes. And as he walks out of the meeting room, he is surprised to see a ladder on the floor and a 300-pound electrician splayed out on the electrical racks inside the ice rink, because he had been using the wrong ladder. He used an extension instead of a proper step ladder. And the ladder was on the floor, 300-pound guy hanging on aluminum racks that can maybe support 100 pounds, screaming out for somebody to help him, because the 12 feet that he could potentially fall could cause serious injury, as well as, you know, potentially break those electrical wires and lead to a fatality. And that I use in a lot of ways when I talk to people about kind of what we do. That's what safety training looks like right there. Yes. It's not that he doesn't care. It's not that the company doesn't care. It's just that, you know what, people are doing the things that they did a long time ago when maybe just getting the information out was good enough. And right now there are a lot of things at play that make it that just getting the information out doesn't work. And I mean, you talk about learning, and you talk about learning across the board, and you've talked about it in other ways. And when it comes to like higher education, learning has changed. When it comes to even, primary education, learning has changed, right? They're embracing cognitive learning theories since the 1960s, and curriculums have changed in high schools and primary schools and universities, and people have grown up with different things, learning in different ways. And the reason that they're learning in different ways is because it's better, right? It works. Information sinks in. People get it. People engage with it. People remember it. Whereas conventional kind of workplace learning, training is still, like you said, it's training. It's just pushing the information out, and we're getting less and less results. I keep talking about there are different things at play right now. Technology is obviously coming in, right? New technologies, cheaper technologies, access to technology. The workplaces are becoming more diverse. And, you know, me as a mid-40s, middle-aged person, always rant about millennials, right? It's caused pain in my existence. It's ruining my TV. But yeah, millennials have grown up learning in different patterns and better patterns, by the way. And everybody else, whether they're a millennial or not, are engaging with technology that are built on these patterns and cognitive theories. And in that way, a 60-year-old on the workforce is actually engaging in technology and experiential learning in ways that millennials or 20-year-olds or 5-year-olds or 8-year-olds are doing it now. So the conventional methods just don't work anymore. I mean, one of the stats that we can throw out is, and this is Ebbinghaus forgetting curve. I mean, everybody right now is probably Googling or flipping back to their old psychology book from first year, but 70% of information is forgotten within 24 hours. Right. So, yeah. I mean, I like to think that I'm super exciting to listen to. I like to think that I'm devilishly handsome and I have a voice like Barry White and everybody just hangs on every word I say. But the reality is that probably people are going to listen to this podcast and within 24 hours forget 70% of what I said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when it comes to something so critical as safety and safety in the world, like there are people's lives at risk here, right? Not only to say the fines, the potential for fines, the you know, the bad PR now too with social media and the ever-present watchful eye of the public that can happen when an accident happens in a workplace. It's not only the fine that can cost a company, but you know, this dwindling effect of people talking about it, it being in the social, what do you call that, the cloud. You know, there are bigger risks at play. And when you're thinking about how important it is with a worker and a worker life, you know, yeah, that's why we've gotten to where we've gotten, and we're kind of innovating in ways that can beat that 70% curve.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I was gonna say, well, two things. The first one is the thing about safety training is when I see someone that has kind of a, I want to say, even laid back, you know, and even like whatever kind of approach to safety training from an employee perspective, I'm always really quick to say, hey, this isn't just about you. You know, if you don't get this, you know, yeah, you're the guy that falls and hopefully doesn't fall and break his ankles because you didn't use the ladder right. But there are a lot of safety instances where it's someone else's life that's on the line because you didn't pay attention, or someone else's, you know, safety or physical health or whatever else on the line. Safety isn't just about you. And so that's one of the things when people are have that kind of whatever, you know, I'll be fine or whatever happens to me happens. I know my stuff. I know my way around. Like, I'm not teaching you for your benefit. I'm teaching you for that guy's benefit, because at some point he's going to need you to, you know, hold his ladder. He's going to need you to do whatever it needs to do to protect him, to spot him, to help him. And if you don't know the right things to do, he's the one that's in trouble. And the second piece, I want to ask you a little bit. I love talking about the forgetting curve. There was actually some research done in the last few years around physicians and how they learn, how doctors learn, that backed up some of the stuff that Ebbinghaus came up with in his research, because his stuff is more than 100 years old and we still cite it all the time, you know, because it was so impactful and it matters so much to us and how we design learning, how we design training. How have you guys kind of come at that angle then? If you know this is a real problem, you know that forgetting curve is real and people are not going to retain this, how can we then design learning that actually improves retention?
Okay, that's a great question. I mean, and part of it, number one, is obviously you got to make sure that you have the right information, right? Like, and especially when it comes to safety, you know, standing in front of somebody and you have that audience, whether they're captivated or engaged or not, let's set that aside. You have to have the right thing. You have to be saying the right thing. It's got to be compliant. The information has to be accurate. You know, there are a lot of companies that have a book that is sitting inside of their basement that they've been using for 50, 60 years. And I know I used the story about how ladder safety really hasn't changed that much, but the time frame that I was talking about was like 5 years. In 60 years, how you are safe around a ladder has changed very much, right? You know, in 100 years, the safety in a worksite has changed a lot. And honestly, depending on what jurisdiction you're in and depending what you're concerned about, safety has changed probably in the last couple months. So you've got to make sure you have the right information. But that set aside, if you've got that, number one. Number two is what I tell people is your workforce is a dynamic. Your workforce now is made up of people of various ages, various backgrounds, probably various races, creeds, everything that can be. We're a diverse nation, United States, Canada, both diverse workforces. And so what you've got to do is be able to deliver a message that actually resonates with people and the way people learn. So you're right. We quote Ebbinghaus a lot, and it's 100-year-old research. And I guess the point is that while it was right then, as it turns out, everybody's been doing a lot of research afterwards, and it's still right. You know, human brains are a fickle thing. We don't remember more. We haven't gotten better. We haven't changed the physiology of our brain. But we can work with that. Part of what we're doing is using technology to get around that. I mean, it's about sending out that message in a way that you can remind people, and in reminding people, retain it. Some of the other numbers that you throw around, people retain 10% of information, give or take, from reading, right? 50% from demonstration. But you get into really key numbers like 70% when practicing, 90% when using. So it comes to kind of working those things into the learning methodology. Instead of just pushing the information out, making sure that you're using, in our case, technology to have quizzes, practice the safety in a safe environment. So instead of actually having to set up the ladder, pick an image with the right ladder set up, you know, ask which ladder should we use in this situation, things along those lines, testing can help. I mean, you think back about your, I don't know, how long has it been, Ben, since you were in university?
It has been more than 10 years.
You don't have to tell everybody.
More than 10 years.
Just to hang out at the pub, or are you talking about taking classes? It's been a while for me too, probably a lot more than 10 years. But when you think back on that, I mean, part of those conventional learning that you did when you were aspiring to be a doctor, or you were aspiring to be, you know, the Nobel playwright, or whatever you were aspiring to be, was about, you know, getting some instruction in a kind of Socratic method, and then testing, right? Studying, testing, studying, testing, studying, testing. And there's been a lot of research that actually shows, you know, that studying, testing, studying, testing, studying, testing doesn't work as well as studying once and testing and testing and testing and testing. And when you do a method like that, your level of retention actually improves dramatically. And then when you work in things like a spacing effect, so you take those tests within specific timed intervals, your level of retention works, you know, exponentially better. And you can take that Ebbinghaus curve, which, you know, is tough to illustrate in a podcast, but for everybody who knows, it's just a plain exponential curve. It goes real sharp down and to the right, which is the opposite of what you want to do in any financial situation, but usually what I do on my stocks. But yeah, it falls sharp down and to the right. And so what you can do with studies, test, what you can do with integrating in kind of practical testing instead of just a ABC quiz, what you can do with making the tests themselves a mixture of hard tasks and easy tasks, not trying to set up the learning just to pass somebody. I mean, in doing things like that at specific time intervals, the level of retention gets closer and closer and closer to 100%. And if you want it, by the way, we've got case studies that prove it. I mean, we've done it with clients and tested their workers 1 week later after getting a traditional safety method, and the level of retention was about 15%. And then we tested them using an LMS with spacing and testing and all of these intervals in a training methodology as a whole, and the level of retention was about 92-93%.
Interesting.
And, but, yeah, it's dramatic. And it's not expensive. It's not more expensive. It's not more involved. Actually, you can use these technologies that exist out there, and it doesn't cost you more. I mean, conventional safety training, worker safety training, is actually really expensive when you think about it. Grabbing everybody off of that production floor and pulling them into a room, that's a huge sunk cost, right? Production is down for an hour or however long, and then down for another half hour where everybody gets adjusted and back into the swing of things and working, right? Mm-hmm. We know that it's not very effective, so you're spending a lot of time to get something that isn't effective. That, by the way, is not a smart decision. But you're doing that. And then, of course, there's the bill for the donuts, for the pizza, right? Eliminating as many distractions as you possibly can. I don't know, maybe put in a cell jammer to stop people from doing Facebook or YouTube or whatever else they'd rather be doing instead of listening to your training. You know, it can be very expensive. We've done some research, and for a company with about 500 employees, the cost, the total cost, so direct and indirect cost, usually comes in around $200,000 a year. That's a big expense, right?
Yes.
But you can use technology like an LMS, and it can launch these online courses. Of course, we have them, but it can launch these online courses with the timed intervals and the quizzes, and it really is as simple as pressing start. And you're going to get an engagement that's around, you know, the high 90%. You're going to get retention, and as a result, you're going to get safer employees. Now, we obviously do this from the perspective of safety and safety training, but the same cognitive methodologies work for, I don't know, everything, management skills, right? Any kind of worker training. Because in my experience, and as limited as it is, in my experience, most companies don't tackle workplace learning the same way that higher institutions tackle workplace learning. Most companies tackle workplace learning in a perspective of, I hired somebody. I hired somebody because they already know what to do. I just want them to do it. Right. And we'll talk about lifelong learning, and we'll talk about all these things in a corporate boardroom, or we'll talk about all these things when we're having coffees and engaging in conferences and say, yeah, I really want my employees to care and be engaged and drive, and I want to set up everything for it. But most companies are not changing the way they actually implement that type of learning. And if you're not doing that, you're not going to get the results.
What's the, that really leads me to the, one of the questions I want to ask you is, if you had, you know, someone sitting here in front of you, you got a couple of them listening into you right now, what advice would you give them? They're an HR leader, they're a learning leader, they're even a small business leader, and they want to create that culture of learning, not the culture of training, of passive, I'll just dump it in your lap and walk away and hope you get it, not that kind of approach, but to really cultivate that so that people feel like they're actually getting it, they're absorbing it, they're putting it into practice, because learning, and at the end of it, is really about behavior change, right? It's not just about knowledge transfer, but it's about making them do something hopefully different, smarter, better, faster than they were doing it before, safer in your case. But how can we really cultivate that culture of learning?
Yeah, those are, those, I mean, great question, foundationary question, right? You go online and there'll be 10,000 follow these steps, do this, do this, do this. I mean, the one thing in all of my research and understanding that they share is that it's got to come from the top, right? Like the message and the belief and the behavior, it's not enough to say it. You have to do it yourself, right?
Lead by example.
Yeah, in every way, shape, or form. And it's not like do it because somebody's watching. Do it because you want to do it. There's a big difference in that, right? I talk to lots of other CEOs, presidents, things like most are pretty smart people. Most, like, let's not say all, but most are pretty smart. I mean, I'm obviously on the side that is not that smart, but most are pretty smart and know what needs to be done. But there's a difference between knowing it and doing it. And where most companies fail is in that execution. It's not in the strategy so much. It's in the execution. So when I say you got to lead by example, or it's got to be in the top, you got to do it very much as if nobody's watching, right? It's like dancing like nobody's watching, right? You got to be that kind of passionate about it, because if you're not, nobody will be. Now, if you are, that does not mean everybody will be, right? And that for me, by the way, as a leader in this company, is the hardest pill for me always to swallow, right? Like, I'm passionate, I'm engaged, I really want it. I want everybody to be successful. I want them to be learners. I'm taking courses, I'm going places, I'm suggesting reading, I'm talking about the latest thing that I learned, right? And asking people, what's the latest thing that you did? Well, how do you feel about it? Tell me what you think. Why don't we do this together? You know, I'm trying to do that. I'm not getting 100% engagement. I offer incentives. I'm not getting 100% engagement. And maybe that's, over the course of time, harder and harder and harder for me to accept that just because you do it and you do it right, you're probably not going to get everybody. But that doesn't mean you stop doing it. And by the way, as well, if you have a methodology, that methodology isn't going to work for everybody, and that methodology isn't going to work all the time. So the other most important thing is that if you believe it and you're doing it as if nobody's watching, you better be watching. Right? You got to have metrics in place. You got to have a dashboard in place. You got to be looking at it all the time. Because at least in my experience, changing behavior is a series of micro steps. It's not a 180 or about face. I'm trying to think back of the 20 plus years ago that I was in university, but you know, behavior only changes dramatically because of trauma. So I don't suggest that for any workplace. I mean, I guess that's an option, right? You could set up a really bad scenario, a traumatic event, and maybe everybody will toe the line. But in the absence of you being a sociopath, what you probably want to do is a series of micro adjustments. And so, okay, number one, you believe it, you're doing it. Number two, watch it, right? Watch everybody else. And then, you know, experiment with methodologies. Experiment in what's the best thing for each person. And a good, there are a lot of technologies that exist out there that can help you with this, right? There are LMS in place. There are different learning methods. There are there are systems set up that are literally as easy as push a button and it does kind of the 80% that you need it to do. But that 20% is pretty critical. I don't know if that answered your question or just kind of got you a whole bunch of material that ends up on the editor floor.
No, that I actually wrote down dance like no one's watching and learn like no one's watching, because I think that's a really I'll probably have to use that as like the title of a blog post, because I love that idea of we should always be doing this, and it shouldn't feel like, by the way, I read a TED, I watched a TED talk this morning, and here are the three things that you should do to be a better leader. It shouldn't feel like it's mechanical if you're leading others. It should be like, hey, you know what? I saw this really cool thing this morning. Here's one of the neat ideas I got out that really applies to us and our business. One of the one of the books I read years ago that I loved, here's an example, a book called The Frontline Leader, and it's the story of Chris Van Gorder, who's the CEO, one of the good ones. I can't lump you in the bad ones yet, Rick. I don't know you well enough. But Chris is one of the good ones, and he talks about how he communicates with people. And every single morning, he gets up, first thing in the morning, goes to his computer, scrolls through some of the news headlines that apply to the healthcare business, because that's the business he's in, and will send out an email to all of the employees in the company saying, hey, here's a couple things that you probably need to read that matter to us, our industry, the kind of care we have, the new research that's coming out, like anything that's relevant and helpful. And he shares that with people because he's consumed it himself already and filtered out some of the things that he thinks are going to help them to do their jobs better, be more informed, things like that. And that's a great example of leading by example and not making it feel like go and do these things because you're going to be tested on it, but because I want you to be successful. I think that we can all be more successful if we're more informed, and he shares it from that perspective.
And creates a dialogue, right? Yes. I mean, that's the best part of it. He's every day starting a conversation, and not everybody is taking part in that conversation. That's okay, right? But some are, and they're having conversations with people, and you know, that's when you get that really interesting kind of exponential growth and real dynamic change. So yeah, and some guys do it really well, and I tell you, sometimes it's a chore too, right? I mean, I bet you there are days that he gets up in the morning and he's just tired.
Yes. No doubt.
I don't want to read. I don't want to send this email, right? Or he looks at the open rate on the email and goes, man, nobody read that. I don't want to do this anymore, right? And that, by the way, is another, you know, one of those good cognitive studies in learning and implementing behavior change. Like, everything is exciting and new at the start, and it will always plateau at some point, right? You will get diminishing results at a certain point. And if you're watching things, if you're doing things the right way, you can tweak, you can maneuver, you can change to try and get it exciting and engaging enough. But sometimes you just got to stick to it, you know? And that seems to be hard too for people and for companies as well. It's like you hit that plateau and you get scared. You hit that plateau and you're like, oh no, but all the corporate books tell me that it's always got to be going top and to the right. Like, it's always got to be going that way. I didn't get enough shareholder equity built up today. Like, come on, I got to move. I don't know, these are some of the conversations over here. But you know, like, and that's tough. And sometimes, you know, we look at it from an athlete, and an athlete will tell you, and these are great parallels when you hear about an athlete, like, hey, you want to lose weight? It's not rocket science. Eat less, do more, right? That it's basic fundamentals. You can read about this diet, this diet, this diet, this diet, this method, this method, this method. It's all the same, right? Do more, eat less, fine. Okay. So the strategy is there, but the execution is a little tough. But every athlete hits a plateau and they muscle through it, right? Every Navy SEAL will say, muscle through it. When you're tired, muscle through it. And sometimes, at least in corporate learning and corporate, that's difficult because it's in contradiction to what is like this corporate oversight of it's always got to be moving up and to the right. Your chart's always got to be moving up and to the right. And when it stales, you've got to figure it out. So, you know, it goes back to the measuring aspect of it, I think. If you're measuring things, you can see that. You can make micro adjustments. Yeah, I don't know.
Absolutely. I'm ranting with you. No, I'm with you on that because, like you said earlier, it's what change – about change behaviors is not about I snap my fingers or you go to a training and suddenly you are, you know, 2x as good as you were when you went in. Usually it's a small step in the right direction, then another small change, another small innovation, and it's just little things that over time build up to success. You know, maybe today you do this one thing right and then tomorrow you do another thing right, but it's not like you completely change all those things all at once. I'm totally with you on that one. I agree with it, and Yeah. Good points, good examples, great reminders on even measuring and components like that, and make sure that you're staying on top of this stuff. You want to understand those components as well. So let's wrap it up a little bit. If someone wants to know more about Safety Now, what they're doing, what you're doing, any of those things, what's the best way someone can connect?
Go to safetynow.com. I'm excited to have a conversation with anybody. My information is there. You can send an email to me, rickt@safetynow.com. I could spend the entire day talking to you, and I'd probably make some asinine jokes, but I could spend the day doing it. So if you want to, reach out to me that way. Go to the website. We'd love to have a conversation with you.
Excellent. Awesome. This has been so much fun, Rick. Thank you to the team over at Instructure for putting us in touch. Thank you to Rick for joining me for a discussion about learning and some of the elements for success. I really appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you.
All right. To everybody else, thank you for joining us today on today's episode of We're Only Human. I am Ben Eubanks, your host, and I will catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.